Discord right here on the Podzilla 1985 Network. This is Podzilla After Dark. Welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Shannon Young. I'm going to be your host tonight. With me, of course, we have Beardo Benjo himself, Mr. Jesse Kimball.
Really? That could have gone to three different people. Hi.
It's true.
I guess.
Also, quick plug, if you like the VR, if you like the VR kids, make sure you check out Beardo Benjo's channel on YouTube. It's really good. Also with us tonight, we've got coughing Lindsay Wolfgang.
At least I'm not wheezing yet.
I hate these Pokemon jokes.
Wheezing sounds like a...
Where the Plinko machine at?
The Pokemon will be forever. Forever.
Once again with us tonight... Absent last week, and we missed her absence. Shelby Chan.
Hello.
Sitting in the darkness. Somehow sitting in the same room as Jesse Kimball. Jesse Kimball illuminated Shelby in darkness. I don't understand.
Hers does look like weirdly blue over there.
He actually just had some of that that Violet Beauregard gum. Just like 5 minutes ago.
Violet.
As the show goes on, it's going to get real weird.
that pun brought to you by the one and only Double H with us tonight.
Not my name.
Oh,
you know how it goes. Chicka 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 yang yang yang.
And finally, we're not sure how long he'll be here with us, but Mr. Chicka Chicka Yank Yank himself, Tanner Calvert.
Howdy ho.
Not like you were gonna have him taken out. He's going to be here a little while longer. I don't know when my guy's going to catch up to him, but when he does.
When you see the headlights flat. So Tanner is literally on his way to go duck hunting. Let that sink in. Let that sink in for a minute.
You can say it, little kid, because my phone just broke up real bad.
Let it sink in for a second. I'm going to take a sip of this wine while you guys let that gestate.
What the hell did you say? That works.
Yeah.
Gestation.
That's what marinade. What did you say?
I said you're going duck hunting.
I thought she said urinate. That has nothing to do with gestation.
Also with us tonight, Dalton Anthony.
Yo.
Well, someone mentioned urinating. I thought...
He popped up in the chat.
That's a good thing I didn't do that well, where people would actually think he was here, because he wouldn't say anything for the next 50 minutes, because he'd be on his phone anyway. So, I mean,
he doesn't have to scroll through dating apps anymore. That's this guy. Anyway, tonight
Ethan liked that one.
Ethan likes everything because he's a good boy. So we're continuing Nostalgic November tonight on this Thursday, and tonight we've got Lindsay. What do we got? What do we got coming up here in about 5 minutes?
We are doing something slightly different. We were each to pick a show that we like and have watched multiple times, and then pick five favorite episodes from that show.
Yes. Did everyone do the assignment?
I understood the assignment.
All right.
I also did it.
Just so everybody knows, and this is not a joke. This isn't a joke. I am deaf in my left ear. I don't know if that's permanent or temporary. We're hoping it's temporary.
Temporary.
But I can't hear anything. So, you know, turn me up in my headphones.
Turn me up in my headphones.
I can't hear it. Anyway, the Chappelle Show joke. Hey, before we get into the show, I know this isn't the show for news anymore. You could turn to No Turning Back with Shannon Young. You can find the link right there on our Facebook or on our, I just dropped my pen. Hold on. Okay. I got my pen back. I don't need it.
You okay?
I was going to say, Hunter, you could have just handed him another pen.
Oh, this is a Sharpie, though.
That's true.
This is a Sharpie. This is specific.
Oh. Hang on a minute. Just hand me that. I'll tell you what. You hand me the Sharpie.
I don't think I have a Sharpie yet. I don't need the Sharpie. Do you need it?
I don't. Never mind.
Okay.
Nope.
No, you don't need it.
No, I don't. I'm good.
Before we get into the show, This isn't the new show, but I do want to mention that the QAnon shaman we found out today was sentenced to 3 years.
The QAnon shaman.
41 months, I think.
41 months. He won't serve the whole thing, probably, but he's going to serve.
He'll serve 4.1, probably.
It's good. It's a good thing, little bastard.
That is.
I liked his quote, Hunter. I believe you sent, I think it was you that sent it. His quote was basically, I should not have done what I did. I have no excuse. Yeah.
Yeah.
No kidding. Yeah.
I honestly, to me, that's more gratifying than any of the rest of it because, again, like you said, he's not going to serve that entire time, but it literally says, I was wrong for entering the Capitol. I have no excuse, no excuse whatsoever. That's to me, that's almost as gratifying. I mean, yes, he should also go to prison, but just the fact that he had to say it, even if he doesn't mean it, the fact that he had to say it.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
That is good stuff, and I'm very happy about that. We wait patiently for the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict. Spoiler alert, he's innocent on all charges. Yeah. A quick spoiler on that. That city's going to burn, which is surprising because he killed white people. So, equal opportunity.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Shannon, they weren't good people.
No, they weren't. They were rioters.
Some real scumbags off the street.
That's why the judge would not allow them to use the term.
The looting starts.
The shooting starts. That's why they wouldn't allow them to say that they were victims in court. They were called rioters. And anyway,
but apparently there is something new with they're trying to get a mistrial because of a.
No, that's Aubrey. That's the Aubrey case.
No, they're trying to get a mistrial in the Rittenhouse case too.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the jury's already out. Like they're not going to get a mistrial now.
They were trying.
Yeah, because it was a few hours ago, I guess, while the jury was deliberating. But I don't think the jury's finished, have they?
No, they're deliberating now. And I didn't even get to mention this on my show last week, because I talked so much about the Rittenhouse trial that I get talked about the Aubrey trial, where the defense... Did you see... All right, Lindsay, I know. Look, I'm not going to do this long, all right? But I got to mention it. Did you
see... didn't say anything.
I'm saying it because I made promises to myself and my Lord... And I'm not gonna do this all the time, but I'm gonna bring it up. Did you guys see that in the Aubrey case, the defense attorney objected to black pastors being in the courtroom because it influenced the jury? Al Sharpton sat with the family of the victim, and the defense attorney, who is an old Southern white guy, believe it or not, objected to Al Sharpton being there. And said that it influences the jury. It's intimidation. They don't want. He specifically said, "We don't want any more black pastors." He said, "Black pastors in the courtroom, whether it's Al Sharpton or I guess Jesse Jackson earlier was not Jesse Jackson. He just got his black people mixed up. Who would have thought that this man would do that?" He then made a joke about dressing up like Colonel Sanders, and I don't know the exact context of it, but. He was given a talking to by the judge, and of course, that mistrial did not happen. But the jury in that trial, if you're worried, the jury in that trial is 11 white guys and one black person, or 11 white people and one black person, so they're probably going to get away with it too. So don't worry, white people, you're safe.
Yeah, so the thing with the Kyle Rittenhouse mistrial...
I didn't see this. What was it?
They were brought into a courtroom to view drone video footage.
I did hear that.
That they had requested to review earlier. No one but the jury was present in the courtroom when they viewed that footage, and they spent about 45 minutes inside before leaving. The problem is, they're saying that the video was sanitized. So they're declaring they're trying to get a mistrial because they didn't see what footage was shown to the jurors to know that it was... legitimate, I guess, or it was what it was supposed to be.
Well, the judge in that case is also a fucking joke, so whatever. Look, the point is, they're all going to get away with it. Everyone's going to get away with it, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's one of those things. That it's really unfortunate that they went for. Don't get me wrong. He did absolutely murder those people. But it's unfortunate they went for a murder because it's. There's enough footage out there showing that Rittenhouse got, beat up a little.
Well, he got,
so he can argue self-defense.
No. He got beat up a little after he shot the first guy. And his argument of self-defense is ridiculous. You cannot claim self-defense when you caused the actions. I
100%
agree
with you.
he went from his home to that city with that rifle, lied to the police, lied to everybody. He defended a property that he had no connection to, that wasn't in his city, and his actions caused all this. You cannot claim self-defense when you yourself cause the action. Like that, and like I know that's his defense, but it's ridiculous.
Yeah, he fucked around and found out, right. And then like, and he was using that as an excuse to kill people.
He shot the first guy, and then they had footage as he's running away, and they're chasing him, saying, "You know, why'd you do that? Why'd you do that?" He yelled at him, "He pulled a gun on me," which was a lie. That never happened. I think it was the third person he shot did pull a gun, which the defense just took off with, because that guy absolutely bombed on the stand and made the prosecution look terrible. So both of these cases are absolute jokes. Absolute jokes. That's not what we're here to talk about. I'm sorry, Lindsay. I'm taking the fun away again. This is old Shannon. We're going to get rid of old Shannon. Old Shannon's on a different channel now. This is new Shannon. New Shannon loves having fun.
I sense a thick layer of sarcasm.
You got a new hat. I want it.
It's back there somewhere. So tonight, for Nostalgic November, we are talking about we're all picking one of our favorite shows from yesteryear. And we're picking five of our favorite episodes from that, and we're going to talk about it. Spoilers abound, because I'm going to spoil the shit out of my choices. So everybody knows. Now, and keep it with tradition, we normally start with Jesse Kimball. So tonight, we're going to start with Jesse Kimball's fiance, Shelby Chan. Welcome back. She didn't know. She had her headset half off. She was ready to sit there for a few seconds, and then she just had to put it back on really quick. Unprepared. Didn't see it coming.
I was listening, and I knew what was going on.
All right, so how do you guys want to do this first off? Do we say our show, then we go on episode by episode, and just go around the table?
Whichever. I didn't know if it would be easier for us to just do the five at once, or to go around episode by episode. That's fine.
I think we did five at once. People are going to start like just
zoning out.
Yeah, people are going to zone out.
All right, so Shelby, tell us what your television program is, and what your first episode is.
So my television program is The Amazing World of Gumball. It is a just ridiculously goofy cartoon about a cat and a fish who are brothers, and just the weird shenanigans they get into. And the first one I want to pick is it's the episode called The Future. They have a friend named Banana Joe, and his mom Barbara paints paintings that can kind of tell the future. She gets kidnapped. Somebody wants to use her paintings. His name is Rob, I believe. Yeah, Rob, who is a weird side character who is usually mad at Darwin and Gumball for not remembering he exists, because in fairness, he's in like one in every 30, 40 episodes, so everyone forgets he exists. So Darwin and Gumball save her and also kind of erase Rob from existence by erasing him from one of her paintings.
Jesus!
Yeah.
That's dark.
It's pretty funny, though, and Rob deserved it. He comes back later. It's fine.
Gumball, is that the one with the weird high... Like, I seem to remember it was, like, animated, but also real or something. Am I crazy? Or is it all animated?
It's got some real stuff in it.
Yeah, there's, like, claymation people. There's one of the characters' name is Sussy, and she's actually one of the creators, like, lower half of the face turned on the other side, and they have googly eyes on the chin, so when she talks, like, the googly eyes... It's a mix. There's like paper.
It's an interesting mishmash style.
Was this Adult Swim?
Actually, hang on.
No, it's Cartoon Network.
I gotta.
Yeah, it is technically a kids show.
Oh yeah, very very kid friendly there. Yeah, isn't that Frisky Dingo?
Yeah. Uh huh.
No.
It looks like Frisky Dingo.
It looks like it, but it is not. So he's like super fluffy, and that's the principal, and this is their teacher, Miss Simeon, and this is everything is backwards, Jesus. That's Penny. This is Larry the box guy.
That was Cartoon Network had a real run there where they were just making really weird shit. I love like Regular Show. I love Regular Show. What a strange program that was. Yeah, very strange.
I really the beginning of Regular Show, but I did not like the middle of it.
I saw like seven episodes, so.
Because there for a while, Cartoon Network, the kids' shows were real hot. Like between Regular Show, The Amazing Gumball, they had Steven Universe going. Obviously, Adventure Time has been a huge hit. But
Chowder.
Chowder. Chowder.
Chowder.
It's Chowder. Say it right, Shelby. Chowder.
Chowder.
There you go. All right. Let's squeak over to next to her to Mr. Jesse Kimball.
Hey, all right. Mine's gonna be Futurama.
Son of a No, I'm kidding. You're good.
I said it in the chat. Yeah, Futurama is it's one of my all-time favorite shows. I could have picked a lot for this, but Futurama is still the most frequent one that I go to sleep with. I think that Shelby doesn't hate it yet.
What?
Futurama.
Ever hate Futurama.
Yeah, right?
Okay, good. All right, so my first one, I'm going to do the Farnsworth Parabox. That's the episode where Farnsworth invents an alternate universe in a box. And inside that universe is it's the same universe, except everything is different by, like, any coin flip came up the opposite side. And it's just a great episode. You meet just alternate versions of the whole crew. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite, like, Shannon moments of me and Shannon hanging out at GameStop.
Oh, yeah. I know where this is going. Yeah.
So in this episode, like, you know, it's two Benders, and, you know, Bender likes to talk about being doomed. And so, like, both of them do it at the same time, like, in unison, like, you know, harmony, whatever, because it's the same voice actor. And it's just, me and Shannon did that in GameStop one day, just out of nowhere.
Just completely random. And, like, we couldn't have been, we've tried replicating it and can't.
So many times.
It was perfect.
Can't do it.
That also has one of my favorite lines in the entire series when Fry finds out that Leela lied to him about the date, and he goes, "That's why you said you had to go meet that ghost."
Like the Zoidberg interactions.
Oh yeah,
well, the Zoidberg interactions are great when they're both talking about, like, big shots.
Yes, and then they start crying because they're both liars and poor and miserable. Oh, that is a fantastic episode. I love that episode.
It's like one of Bender's, like, one of my favorite lines from Bender, and that one was just, "Bite my glorious golden ass."
And the ending where Hermes is going to throw the box at the sun, they're like, "Don't do it." He has to pause and look for a few seconds. He goes, "Okay." Just that nonchalant.
He has to think about it for a second.
Just so nonchalant about killing everybody off. All right, that's a good start. That's a good pick. Let's go over to Double H.
Okay. Oh, excuse me. Well, that was a great start.
My name's Freck. Shit.
So my show is one I've referenced here numerous times. Actually, I referenced it last week. I chose to go with The Adventures of Pete and Pete. There's a lot of other shows that I've seen through many, many other times with hundreds of episodes to choose from. Realistically, I mean, honestly, I've probably seen, like, rerun throughs of Friends more than any other show I've ever seen. But it's just not that high on my list. It just happened to be my mom loved it, now my wife loves it, and I like it, but it's just, you know, Pete and Pete is one of those. There's another world, there's an universe out there where I'm full on hipster because this show influenced me that much. Like, there's another version of me that took it way too seriously. And it is. I mean, even when you go back now and watch, you're like, this is so bizarre. This would fit in right in the early days of Adult Swim. But it actually ended up kind of defining, you know, early Nickelodeon, too. Because Nickelodeon was meant to be, this is all kind of weird and it doesn't really make sense. But it's perfect for kids. This is how kids view the world. And so looking at it through that lens is fun to go back and watch it that way. So with that said, the first episode that I'm going to pull for this, and I can't do mine in any particular order.
Same.
First episode I'm going to pull is called What We Did on Our Star Vacation. It's from the very first season, because this was on from 91 to 96. One of the kind of, like, iconic quintessential episodes of the series. The main thing is that summer's ridiculously hot. Everybody's constantly going to Mr. Tasty, the ice cream guy, and he's keeping everybody cooled off, and then he just disappears.
Yep.
And people are just practically dying because, of course, the way the kids see it, they're literally dropping dead in the streets because it's too hot. And they
There's
can't
no
find
ice cream
him. So Pete, Big Pete, Little Pete, and Ellen go off basically on a search for Mr. Tasty. It's one of those great episodes that this is a big weird ensemble cast between the parents, the two Petes, Ellen, and lots of other characters, and everybody gets something to do. and it all really fits in really well. Plus, of all the weird cameos, REM's Michael Stipe is in it as a rival ice cream salesman. He just sort of shows up, and everyone just kind of goes, "Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that's fine. It's Michael Stipe. Of course he is." So yeah, if you're looking for an episode that really sums up the whole show, what we did on our summer vacation is one of the best ones to go to for that.
I never watched Pete and Pete, but Bob, after my breakup with Vina in college, he did tell me that I was the bus driver, and I still don't know what that means.
I'm getting there.
Okay, very good.
Give me time.
Very good.
Yeah.
From my show, as with Lindsay will go last, as is tradition, there's a couple that I wanted to go with. My first instinct was The Simpsons, just because. But The Simpsons is too much. There's too much in The Simpsons. I cannot.
It's too hard to narrow that down to five.
Yeah, I couldn't hammer that down. I was going to go with The X-Files, but I thought that was too obvious.
King of the Hill?
That's also kind of too many.
Yes.
I mean, to be fair, you and I have said this and agreed, I think, that X-Files is not a show when you rewatch, you need to watch every episode.
Right.
You can kind of do the top 10 list and be fine. So you could have done that, but yeah, it's also.
And we did. Me, you, and Kaz. We did. A top 10 list. Go back and listen to it of The X-Files. Right. Lindsay, King of the Hill was my third pick. But I wanted to represent horror on the, and Mr. Show was another one that I was going to do. But I wanted to represent horror, as I often do on the show. So I went with.
Show?
Who is it?
Creep Show?
No, that's too new. That only came out like 3 years ago. 2 years
Tales
ago.
Tales from the Crypt.
Tales from the Crypt. Yes, you're right. It is Tales from the Crypt. The best horror anthology television show of all time. Aired on HBO in the 90s. Scared the hell out of me as a kid. As an adult, I appreciate it so much. The humor and the Crypt Keeper himself, the puppetry, all of it. Just fantastic. All these people got their great starts on it. Arnold Schwarzenegger directed an episode. Tom Hanks is in it. I mean, it's a who's who. And it's just amazing. And the first one that I'm going to pick is an episode called Dig That Cat, He's Real Gone. It's Joey Pants. Hunter, you remember Joey Pants?
Yeah, I remember Joey Pants.
Joey Pants. How do you say his last name? Pantaleone?
No, Pantaleone.
Pantaleone.
Pantaleone, if I remember correctly. Yeah, he was, for those of you who will not remember this reference, he played the reporter in Daredevil.
Yes.
So
he was Ben Urich?
Got that for you.
Was it Jesse?
Ben Urich, yes.
Ben Urich, yeah.
Yep. Ben Urich.
Who was played better by Curtis Hall.
Movie.
Yeah. Because he was
the movie Daredevil with Ben Affleck.
And Daredevil the show, he was Vondi Curtis Hall, and he died, and I didn't appreciate that. Anyway.
He was also black, and Joey Pants was not.
He is not.
there's that.
So in this episode, Joey Pants is a kind of a scumbag who takes this crazy scientist up on his offer to basically, and I forget how they word it, but the basic is he takes over the life of a cat. He gets the 9 lives of a cat. And he becomes a big star in this carnival where they basically kill him night after night. And the deaths become more and more outrageous every time. And he over time turns from kind of a likable scumbag into just a complete dirtbag who's abusive and awful and arrogant. And spoiler alert, the ending is his final one. And he's taken off with all this money. He's going to leave. They bury him alive. And as he's being buried alive and he's under there, he's thinking about all the lives that he spent. And then he realizes that this is actually his last life because he forgot to take into account the cat dying with the experiment. So now he's actually buried alive and he dies very miserably down there. And it's just one of the great things about Tales from the Crypt is that they always have a really good karma system in their shows where the bad guys always get theirs in a really horrible way. And
that good claustrophobic end too.
Yes, being buried alive is a pretty good fear, and it's just a good funny episode too. Joey Pants is a great D-bag, so it's always good to see him get what's coming to him. All right, Lindsay, what's your show and what's your first episode?
So I rewatch this series at least once a year, and I have recently finished rewatching it again because the live action version is going to drop this Friday. Cowboy Bebop is what I'm going with. And my first one is episode 11, Toys in the Attic. Basically, our crew of the Bebop is mysteriously being bitten by something that is causing them paralysis, and they basically go in like a coma-like state. And they're trying to find out what is causing this. It's the entire episode's a big homage to like Alien and Predator and things along those lines. And in the end, it turns out Spike put some leftovers in the fridge and it was in there for so long it became sentient.
Yes. I remember that episode because they had the same like angles and shots from like Alien.
Yep,
with the,
they did that. They did the heat vision goggles and for like Predator and stuff that way.
Yeah, my favorite part of that episode.
Entertaining one.
Somebody made an AMV to Weird Al Yankovic's Living in the Fridge using that episode. And it's fantastic.
Yeah, and they end the whole thing, too, that it gets blown out an airlock.
Which is actually a really beautiful scene. Like, that's a really pretty scene.
Out the airlock.
Out the
just airlock. Rotten food slowly floating through space.
But it's all just glimmering as it freezes in space. So it looks like a million crystals just like, oh, it's so pretty, though.
To be fair, that was also the ending to Alien. They blew him out the airlock.
That's, yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't as pretty, though. Back then. Yeah, you know, off on a tangent, give me a 30-second tangent here. The alien in the first Alien movie, as cool as it was, looks ridiculous now. Because it's very clearly a guy in a suit. His arms were fucking thick. It was just a dude standing there. So the last scenes, especially when you saw him standing, as you could tell it was just a guy. And it takes me out of it. 1 out of 10 movie. Don't like it. All right, let's go back to Shelby.
Huh. My next episode is The Shippening. So this episode basically makes fun of every amateur fan fiction writer ever. This girl, Sarah, who is a living ice cream cone, she finds a magic notebook and just starts writing fan fictions of all the people in the town of Elmore that they live in. So basically she's like, oh yeah, this guy and this girl, and they have like this epic romance, and then it starts happening. So she's just
the
like
shippening. I get it now.
Retconning the entire town and just being like, nope, it happened this way. And nope, he likes her. And in the end, Gumball and Darwin, I think they end up kissing and almost getting married. And they're like, you can't do this, Sarah, stop. And then they destroy the notebook.
Was the cat and the fish almost got married?
Yeah. And they're siblings.
The ones who are brothers.
Yeah, the ones who are brothers.
Holy shit. What is this show you've watched?
It's amazing! It's The Amazing World of Gumball!
Incest and oh my god.
So technically, Darwin was adopted. It's fine.
That is true. That's Woody Allen's excuse. It's fine.
he can get fans of Dexter everywhere are like, vindication!
All right, before we go over to Jesse real quick, I do want to mention Michaela, because Michaela, you know, superstar fan Michaela, she did post hers, and I want to read them off real quick. I hate her, all of her choices except one. iCarly, the one where they go to Japan, I don't even know what that is. Victorious, the pilot episode, no idea what that is. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, the one where Will meets his dad, yes! Yes, fantastic, heartbreaking.
How come you don't love me?
Oh my god, what a, gut punch, Michaela. I tip my hat to you. That is a fantastic one. We also would have accepted the episode where Carlton and Will are both trying to get into the black college.
The gun?
Yes.
Gun. But this was one of the ones I was thinking of. Where you get to see Carlton be like super serious and make a really good point. That was fantastic. Another really good message one. Friends, the one where Chandler proposed to Monica. I don't hate Friends, but... And SpongeBob, the one where he gets fired from his job. I figured that was literally every episode, but okay.
I can't get into that Monica Chandler thing, and I'm not going to spend much time on this either, but I just, they're the worst. Especially after they get together, they're the worst. You watch those episodes. Well, I mean, you watch those episodes now, and like they're horrible to each other. Like, why are we talking about this? Like, it's such a great thing. It's not, like... Chandler's always talking about other women, and Monica's always like putting him down. Oh no, they're not. Please do not mistake the situation. They're all terrible, terrible people, and Joey's the only one who's kind of okay.
Because Ross and Rachel are like, maybe that's why. Because I love the Monica Chandler relationship mostly. Like I love Chandler, but do what? I've watched it for the first time like 3 years ago.
I don't know.
But yeah, like, and maybe it was just because, like, my basis of comparison in that show was Ross and Rachel. I was so fucking sick of Ross and Rachel that, like, this Monica Chandler breath of fresh air.
Yeah, but you know who was
all I needed.
But you know who was better? Monica And shit. Mustache.
Were you just gonna say Dewey?
Magnum PI.
And just leave him. Oh. Yeah.
Tom Selleck. Yeah, Monica and Tom Selleck. Yeah. That's the better one.
Yeah. That was even better than
Tom Selleck, man.
True.
Was even better than that was Monica and Happy Hogan.
John Favreau?
I will forever say it should have been Joey and Rachel. They should have canceled the spinoff. It should have been Joey and Rachel. They should have just left it at that.
I actually would really liked Joey and Rachel together. I thought that was fine.
I can't watch those episodes, man. It hurts me to watch that because he's so good at just being legitimately hurt for the first time, and it's like,
yeah, okay,
I'm good.
Who are we on?
Let's move on,
Jesse.
Futurama.
Getting away from Shelby's incest fantasies.
No, it's Step Bro. It's Step Bro.
What are you doing back there, Step Bro?
All right, my next one is going to be Luck of the Fryrish.
Nope, cancel them. Turn them off. Fucking turn them off right now.
This is one of those episodes that, like, it's a real, like, it's a bit of a tearjerker. Like, it's just it hits you in the heartstrings.
Nope.
Because the episode is all about Fry. You have like these basically two concurrent storylines going. It's like, you know, Fry growing up and then him trying to find this seven leaf clover that he found as a kid that gave him incredible luck and everything. And then he starts finding out that his brother took the clover and had all of these amazing things happen to him because it was a truly lucky clover. Went to space, like, was, and even like so went so far as taking Fry's first name, Philip, because in the very first episode, like, his brother's name is Yancey, and he was like, no, I want to be Philip, not Yancey. And then, you know, you go through the whole show and the plot twist ends up being that his brother had a son named him after his lost brother, Philip, gave him the seven leaf clover, and, you know, he went on to have a wildly successful life. And yeah, it's just a really, really good episode.
Tell like, them it's yeah, it's this one. I swear to God, listen to me, Kimball. If you put that fucking dog on this list, if you put that dog on this
The dog is not on the list.
Okay,
I honestly, as much as like that episode,
the one episode
breaks,
that gets skipped every time we would do watch through.
Oh, like, and this one,
heartbreaker of an episode. But like, I never, I. Anyway, it was a heartbreaker of an episode, and it's good, but it's not on my list.
I actually think this one's a better episode. I think this is the better episode of the two. I do. Bob really likes the dog episode, and it's a good episode, but like this one really broke my heart. I tear up every time. I can't do that.
Yeah.
Those two episodes I can't do. There's only two episodes of The Simpsons that ever made me feel that way, and even those weren't as bad as this. But the episode where you first see the Do It For Her on the wall, and my all-time favorite Simpsons moment when Homer is sitting on the car looking out at the desert night sky after his mom left him again. That absolutely fucking shatters me. But I think the Futurama, the brother one, that is my all-time fucking kill me episode.
It is a really good episode, but it hurts.
It is a great episode, yeah. It finishes with Don't You Forget About Me.
Yeah, I don't do family well. Let's go to Hunter. What's Hunter got up his sleeve?
Okay. My next episode of The Adventures of Pete and Pete is going to be called, you guys will appreciate this, as fans of It's Always Sunny. It's called The Nightcrawlers. It is not about Charlie and Frank wiggling around on the ground in the dark.
It is not, no.
You could use the blankets as a roving base, or, you know.
It's kind of, sort of, along those lines. So again, the show is basically all about, you know, the way kids see the world. And the gist of this is one of the few Little Pete-centric episodes that I really like. The longer the show went on,
kids
the more they tried
so
to make
weird.
Little... Well, they tried to make him the main character, and I was fine with that sometimes, but it was basically by the time you get to that third season, that it felt like he was the main character all the time. That's where it got too much. But this was one of the early ones where it's still him and his, like, weird little cast of friends, and the gist of it is that the International Adult Conspiracy, which, of course, is a thing, because they're constantly giving kids arbitrary rules and reasons to do things, has set bedtimes, and they don't like it. They don't want to go to bed at 9 o'clock, even though they're 10. This is unreasonable. And so, because Little Pete's mom fights back, naturally, no, you're going to go to bed, because I said you're going to go to bed, his goal then becomes to stay up for 11 days straight and break the world record for staying awake. Now, obviously, that's a reasonable thing that someone has actually done. And the entire episode is basically about him and his friends all desperately trying to fight off sleep for 11 days. And it starts out just kind of regular silly, like one of the girls that's with him is constantly pulling on her own braids to keep herself awake. One of them stares at the sun so that she'll keep sneezing. Yep. Yeah, she keeps sneezing so she can sneeze the tiredness out and it'll wake her back up. It just the ridiculous stuff they do, and it ends up with a nice little, one of the few that really plays for this, the little heartwarming moment at the end where mom realizes that there's got to be some compromise and there's got to be, you know, something that she's gone too hard on it. So toward the end, Little Pete is the only one left, and she goes out and recognizes his, you know, his claim to it and says, let's come to a compromise, 10:15. And then as soon as they agree to 10:15, she witnesses his world record and he passes out on the yard. But everything leading up to that. Oh yeah, everything leading up to it is the best because it's just so over the top and ridiculous. It's a great episode with Toby Huss as Artie, the strongest man in the world. Clearly, it's one of his best performances for that. He his radio is keeping him up, so they have to like dance party to it. Radio batteries die, and he instantly just crashes. And I can't give you any like, great lines or anything off the top of my head, but
fabulous.
Toby Huss is a guy who disappears into everything he does because I did not know until we rewatched this. Sarah and I watched it last year. It was the first time she'd seen it. It was the like third probably time I'd rewatched it in total. I see him in this and I know who he is, but I never recognize the name of the actor. And then I go look through a bunch of other stuff and he's been in like 10 other things that I love. And he's not ever the same guy in any of it. And it's totally bizarre to me that he's Artie, the strongest man in the world.
And
Artie's coming back.
Also in King of the Hill.
Later on. Yeah. He's Cotton.
He's Cotton. Cotton Mather. And Con.
Or not Mather. I went to scream for a minute. But yeah. No, that was Cotton Weary. It is Cotton Mather, isn't it?
Cotton Hill?
Where am I getting Mather from? Cotton Hill, yeah.
Where'd you getting Mathers, man? No one knows.
Cotton Weary is one. I don't know.
It's Lee Schreiber.
Moving on.
Yeah.
And Scream. There we go. Yeah. That's it.
All right, well, let's move past that. Michaela, I have to answer this question, I have to respond to this. There's an episode of Family Guy that's sad. It's the one where Brian gets hit by a car and dies. I can't watch that episode. No, fuck that episode. Because you knew they were going to bring Brian back in like two episodes. It was a bullshit attempt to get ratings. I hate that episode for different reasons. It's a sad attempt to, like, it's clickbait. It's a clickbait episode. Anyway, sorry.
It'd be different if he actually did die and stayed dead.
He was dead for like 2-3 episodes. Then they brought him back, and it was like nothing happened.
I guess like inside those episodes, they did like a Deaths of Superman thing where they kept bringing in like other characters to take his place. And
they got a different.
I think James Gandolfini was one of them, wasn't he?
It wasn't Gandolfini. It was one of the guys from The Sopranos, though. But it wasn't. I don't think it was Gandolfini. Oh, okay. I think it was one of the Italians.
Yeah, that'll narrow it down.
Anyway,
well done.
My next episode from Tales from the Crypt is called Forever Ambergris, which, Jesse, is also a term from Futurama. Yeah, that's a good episode there, too. So Forever Ambergris is about a wartime journalist photographer played by Steve Buscemi, who's this like young guy. He's young in it. He's getting all these awards and accolades. He's the biggest thing going. And this veteran journalist reporter. And they both get sent into this war-torn area. They find the veteran finds out he's super jealous of Steve Buscemi because Steve Buscemi is so much more successful than he ever was, and he's so jealous. He's got a beautiful wife and all this stuff. He finds out that this village apparently got sprayed with some kind of chemical that not only killed everyone there but just absolutely mutilated them. So he lies to Steve Buscemi and tells him, you know, I found out this is happening down in this village. You go take the credit for it. You're going to be better at this than I am. And Steve Buscemi is like, oh, thank you so much. So he goes down, he gets the pictures, he comes back, he starts to get sicker and sicker. And in one of the absolute most horrific things I've ever seen in a TV episode, all the soldiers are sitting around a campfire, and Steve Buscemi comes out of his tent completely, like, deforming. His eye falls out of his head. He's screaming as his tongue's falling out. It is absolutely horrific. And the guy shoots him dead before he can, like, reveal what happened. And it's absolutely, I mean, just ghastly. It's one of the most disturbing. It's one of those things I can't usually watch. I'm not really disturbed by gore, but this one actually messes with me.
Of those old like Tales of the Crypt show, like episodes had some like
fantastic gore effects,
spectacular gore, like practical effects. Like it was insane, especially for the time.
That's why it scared the hell out of me. Well, I always say late 80s and early 90s. That's my favorite time period for horror films because it was all practical and it was so good. The twist ending to it, which I love, is the guy, Steve Buscemi's wife, invites the reporter over to like celebrate his life, and she comes on to him, they start kissing and all this stuff, and then she reveals to him that he wrote her a letter telling her what happened, and she actually had some of his ashes put into the drink that they were drinking, so now they were both infected with it. Because she didn't want to live anymore without him. And so the guy freaks out. He runs to the bathroom. He's trying to wash his face and all that. His nose just falls, like, just peels off completely, leaving the giant gap and blood everywhere. And he screams as the episode ends. That is some gory shit right there. Imagine knowing you were literally about to fall apart. That your face and your eyes, you're literally just about to fall apart. Like, oh my God. Tales from the Crypt.
So, yeah, that's so disturbing.
Glorious, gory.
If it wasn't for
bastard.
The fact that it will give me nightmares, I kind of want to watch it.
It's a good episode. It's fantastic. Lindsay, let's go to
it's
you.
One of the few.
Oh, wait, hold on. Okay, no, let Jesse finish complimenting it.
Okay.
I was going to say, it's one of the few episodes that I've, like, I've seen a lot of Tales from the Crypt, and that was one of the few that, like, will forever be in my memory.
It's just that
I will never, I will never be able to get you. That.
It's that image of Steve Buscemi falling apart. Oh, God, and the scream. Uh-huh. Yeah. Anyway, Lindsay.
My next one is episode 24, Hard Luck Woman. It's basically wrapping up Faye's storyline. She gets her memories back that she'd lost and travels back to where her home was, trying to find where she belongs, only to find it completely gone. And the... ends up running into a classmate of hers that's clearly in her, like, 70s and 80s, and Faye's still there looking like a 20-year-old. And just kind of her realization of all the time that she's lost. And then the other half of the episode is Edward finding her father, and Faye telling her, you have somewhere to go. It's a good thing to have somewhere to belong. And this episode has my absolute favorite song from the series, Call Me. In it. I know the first time I watched this episode, I was bawling like a baby by the end of it.
Anime never usually makes me that sad, but Cowboy Bebop had a couple of those episodes. That being one of them. Also, completely off topic, or off Cowboy Bebop, the episode where Wolfwood dies always bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, no.
Boy, I hated that episode. I just, in my headcanon, I like to pretend he never died. He just went away. Anyway, yeah, that's a good...
He took his little portable confessional and continued on in the desert.
He took his giant cross, which was a machine gun, but also housed other machine guns, and left.
All right, early 90s anime.
Oh, I love it. It was the best. Oh, sorry, right, let's...
Did you mean Vash the Stampede? Anyway.
I like that show too.
I can't tell if Hunter knows what we're talking about or if he looked up the name Wolfwood and just picked another character from that episode. Anime expert, ladies and gentlemen, Double H. All right, Shelby, back to you.
Who am I? Oh.
You're the incest one.
She's regretting that now immediately.
Shelby would like to back out of this bit.
My next one's kind of a two-parter. Sometimes they would do two episodes in one. This one is actually from two separate years that after the entire series was done, they made them back-to-back episodes. They were the Halloween episodes. One of them is just called Halloween, and the other is called Ghost Party. In Halloween, there's just an amazing Halloween song that the entire town sings, and also Mr. Small, the counselor, who is a hippie cloud man, is dressed up as Sailor Moon, and it's pretty great.
I will take any Sailor Moon references in other stuff.
Yeah, just look up, just Google Mr. Cloud as Sailor Moon, or Mr. Small as Sailor Moon, and it's great. And then the follow-up episode immediately after that, that is technically one episode, is Ghost Party, in which Carrie Krueger, who is a ghost, she takes Gumball and Darwin to an actual haunted house and makes them drink a drop of potion that makes them half ghost, so they can see other dead people and they can hang out. And the party's really cool, but no one can know that they're not dead. So, of course, in classic Gumball and Darwin fashion, they overdo it and drink, like, half the bottle and basically kill themselves, and they become real ghosts, and they have to, you know, deal with it. Basically, that's one of those episodes where, like, it's not really canon. They'll reference it, but they didn't die.
So, let's backtrack.
That was the one I was about to say.
let's backtrack really quick. So, your first pick was all about erasing someone from history. Your second episode was about incest, and your third one is about suicide. Wow.
It's a dark show!
Life stories. Wow. They're not going to share that kids need to know this stuff.
I don't talk about it much, but I'm actually half ghost on my dad's side. So
you took the one drop too, huh?
I must be adopted because I'm living, but both my parents are ghosts. So I don't know if that... Like, how that works. Anyway.
Don't worry,
well, since the ghost got her pregnant.
Son of a whore.
No. God. Moving on.
Don't ever. Just ever.
That one, it has a different meaning, too. It has a second meaning. Like the pecan sandies.
Oh, Jesse, please salvage this.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, Lord. Right. Stinky Pete. Fill the crab.
All right, Shannon, my next one is going to be a lighter one for you.
Thank you.
It's a very, very light one. This one's just fun. Roswell That Ends Well.
Yes. Emmy Award winning Roswell That Ends Well.
That one. Yeah.
It is a truly spectacular episode. Basically, the crew ends up getting launched back in time because they were watching a star explode while also microwaving metal. And yeah, that for some reason that launches them back in time. And it turns out that the alien event that happened in Roswell,
1947, classic. Yeah.
Was actually the crew from Futurama. It was Zoidberg and Bender was his spaceship.
Sir, I'm gonna address this to you because your wife is hysterical.
You really don't cook enough roast, Layla.
Layla?
I said Layla. Layla. Oh, buffet, if only I brought my wallet. It's free.
How about these sugar? How about these cookies?
Sugar?
Oh yeah, because in the end, Fry also becomes his own grandfather, which is a huge plot point in several episodes later.
They didn't abandon it.
Yep. Yes. Said past nastification.
I think that was the only episode that they ever won. I think it was an Emmy. They won an Emmy for that. Or it was some award, and very prestigious award. But
major award.
Yeah. But yeah, they won for that episode. It's a fantastic episode. It's one of the quintessential episodes. Quintessential.
Yeah, it's really good. And like especially because it does get referenced so many times later. Like him being his own grandfather is very important to the show. So yeah, the episode. Very important episode to the whole series.
Hey Jesse, you forget
their continuity throughout the series.
Yeah,
just always makes me happy. They're not like, oh, we're just gonna forget this little detail that happened later. But no, instead, a season and a half later, it's like, oh,
yeah.
Bender is the only exception to that rule.
If you go back and watch the first episode, I didn't realize this. Watch the first episode when Fry tips back in his chair, you can actually see someone push the chair. And it wasn't until seasons later when he witnesses the event, you see, I think it was him actually pushing himself into the thing. So,
well,
yeah.
First it was Nibbler.
Nibbler, that was the little guy.
And then eventually it was Fry.
Yeah. This is crazy. That's crazy. Also, you forget the best line from that episode. You ever feel like the only reason you like girls is because you're supposed to?
You're supposed to?
Don't ever say that again.
Don't you ever say that. Like, honestly, most of the bits with his grandfather in that episode are just great. Eat it!
All right, the joy can't last forever. Let's go to Hunter. Sorry, I don't know what that means.
Ah, damn.
I don't know what that means. I'm sorry.
There's not even enough sad episodes. I mean, I could do...
Yo.
So if I wanted to cheat, I could do a two-part episode and do Farewell My Little Viking, too. But spoiler alert, it didn't make the list.
So I don't like the sound of that episode.
That's sad. No.
That's the two-part episode where Artie
that's
leaves
That's where
the show.
Artie leaves.
That's where he leaves. He's as a quick honorable mention, he's coerced into leaving and doesn't realize that that's what's happening. And then when he comes back, he sees that Pete doesn't... It's
he's
not like
fine.
In a bad way, but he sees that Pete doesn't really need like a personal superhero anymore. Like little Pete doesn't. He stands up for himself, and so he tells him, "No, there are other kids in the world who need me," and he disappears. He leaves. I mean, he's like an actual human being, but also super strong, the strongest man in the world. Anyway, the episode I'm going to go with is called Range Boy, and it is. Whereas a lot of other episodes give everybody something to do, and they all kind of have something to do here, this one is very much two different tales, and Artie is part of it, but I'll come back to him. The main part of this episode is, it's a great Big Pete episode where he is, the dad of the family, who they just called dad, owns a driving range. Like, that's his day job. He owns his driving range.
It's the golf cart episode.
Yeah, so Big Pete needs a summer job. He doesn't want to work for his dad. And he doesn't have any way to get another job, so he goes to work for him collecting balls that have been, you know, shot out, been driven out there. But he doesn't want to be seen doing it, because he's embarrassed that that's what he's doing, he's working for his dad. So he puts on this bear costume, like this bear mascot costume they have laying around, to drive around and get the balls. Well, then that turns into a huge deal. People love, because they're always trying to hit the guy who's collecting the balls anyway. Well, now they can try to hit the bear, as he goes back and forth, you know. So Little Pete seizes a business opportunity like anyone would and starts selling tickets to hit the bear. And Dad jumps in on it too. And now Big Pete has become his own biggest problem because now everyone just wants to come to the place and hit the bear. And then they seize upon the idea of, well, we'll have one big unmasking and we'll reveal who the bear is. Which, of course, is the exact thing that he doesn't want. So it becomes this whole thing of... The big lesson becomes, like, you know, being proud of what your parents do and not being embarrassed by it. If Tanner were here doing Boy Meets World, it's the same concept as Sean's dad becoming the janitor at the school and then him not being embarrassed by that. But in a completely ridiculous side story, Artie, at the driving range, who, of course, uses one hand to drive all of his balls, sends one all the way out into the woods where it hits a turtle, who just happens to be his friend, whose name is Clark, and now Clark has amnesia. And so Artie spends various parts of the episode running around just trying to cure Clark's amnesia. And I'm not even going to tell you what he does. I'm going to make you go look it up. The whole series is on YouTube. Just
so
Range
good.
Boy is the name of the episode. He just, come on, speak to me, boy! He just keeps yelling at him, and it's really something. And I think I should have gone back to the one before, but one of my all-time favorite Artie lines, the one that always comes to mind, I think it's from Nightcrawlers, is him just getting mad at people just messing with Pete and going, "Your kind never learns, do you?" And he's just, like, battling stuff back. It's dumb, but it's great. That's it.
I brought a horsey.
Well, you brought that horse about 7 times in the last month. Why does that carry the same energy, by the way, that I realize is, yeah, well, who gives a damn? Or, yeah, well, you said they're all your favorites so far.
That actually, my first choice before Tales from the Crypt, my absolute first choice, but I didn't know how I was going to do it, was Saturday Night Live. Like, I was going to do Saturday Night Live.
Ooh, yeah.
But
that would have been a lot of episodes. Skits, I guess. Yeah.
Because
I mean, at that point, you almost have to go looking for the literal best, like, nights where you just basically have no bomb sketches,
right.
And that is super rare.
And if you're talking about nostalgia-wise, too, there weren't a lot.
The ones that you watched.
A lot of those are newer, so I discounted that. I think it would be more of a favorite skit kind of thing, like we'd have favorite sketches or something.
Yep.
My next episode for Tales from the Crypt is called For Crying Out Loud. It's also just a straight-up comedy episode. It's about, and Lindsay, what's the name of my Murloc in World of Warcraft?
Felsen?
Well, no, that's the other one. The other Murloc.
Oh, Marty Slash.
Marty Slash. This episode's about Marty Slash. He's this little guy. I named my Murloc after him. I love him so much. He's just a short guy. He's a concert promoter and a club owner. And he plans on Iggy Pop The actual Iggy Pop was performing at the club that night, and if for charity.
Iggy Pop, who was also in Adventures of Pete and Pete. Go on.
There you go.
Weirdly enough.
He plans on stealing the money from this charity, and he's going to run away with it. But for some reason, he keeps having this ringing in his ear, and as it progresses into the episode, the ringing turns into, you guessed it, Sam Kinison, who is now, like, his conscious. Yeah. And he's yelling at him constantly about, oh, you shouldn't do that, Marty. They're going to find out. He's just constantly, like, second-guessing. Oh. And it's driving Marty crazy. So
I think you had me watch this one.
I think so, because it's such a good episode. Katie Sagal is in it. Peggy from Married with Children. And she tries to...
They knew each other by then because, you know, Sam Kinison was...
On Married Children.
Al's guardian angel. Right. Yeah.
and now he's Marty Slash's conscience. And she tries to blackmail him. It doesn't go well. He kills her and then is trying to get rid of the body while stealing the money. And he ends up going so insane that he takes like a pin and shoves it into his own ear to stop the voices, which doesn't kill him. He actually gets, they find out what he did. They put him on death row. And as he's sitting on death row, he's just like, let's do this. Hurry up. Come on. Because he just wants to get that fucking voice out of his head. It's very funny. It's a fantastic episode. Everyone should go watch that. Sam Kinison is always just a joy. And I don't know the guy that plays Marty Slash. I've seen him in other things, but I don't know his name. He's one of those actors. But he's just so good. Ethan Kregmiles, all the Tales from the Crypt episodes Shannon has on this list, I have seen because of him. You're damn right, boy.
Yep.
You're damn right. All right, Lindsay, what do you got next?
All right, next I have episode 5, Ballad of Fallen Angels.
Yes.
It is good our answer. First look at Spike's life in the Syndicate and Vicious, and it has a very iconic fight with them in a church with a giant stained glass window, which I have a pop figure.
Saying, you got that pop back there somewhere?
I do. It is awesome, and I love it.
It also has that classic song.
It has Green Bird.
Rain.
Oh, right. Yeah, Rain is in that episode too, mm-hmm. isn't it? See, I always think just Green Bird first. it's one of the... I guess this is honestly one of the first serious episodes in the series. Like, all the rest kind of has a little more of a comedy touch to it. And
ain't nothing funny about
there's
Vicious.
There's not a lot of comedy in this episode at all.
Vicious was my ideal anime guy when I was into anime. He was what I aspired to look like. With the long hair and like, I wanted to be Vicious so badly, but I was not in any way.
And just to double back real quick before I forget it, Marty Slash was played by Lee Ehrenberg, who you probably know better as Pentel from Pirates of the Caribbean. He's one of the two
the idiot pirates. Yeah, yep, that's the guy.
Yep, he's the little fat one.
Yep, love him, absolutely amazing. Sorry, Lindsay. Thank you.
Oh, you're fine. You're good.
Love those pirates.
That's why it's been made.
Yeah, Ballad of Fallen Angels is my favorite Bebop episode. That's my favorite.
I know it was.
Is that that's not the episode where Vicious cuts the guy's eyeballs, is it?
No.
Okay. Because that's my favorite part. Yeah, Hunter, he takes this sword and he tells him that he's going to, with something like, with your last breath, you bleed crimson or something. I forget. Well, you cry crimson. And he takes the sword and just slashes across the guy's fucking eyes. And like
that was either jazz or the Real Folk Blues, one of the two of them.
Does he do the thing where the sword's in the scabbard and it's the anime thing where he just like pulls it out for a second and then the guy just slices in half?
No. He holds the sword to his face and slowly drags it across.
Oh, yeah. That's so much better.
Yeah, no,
Maybe I will watch this show.
Vicious was
Cowboy
a son
Bebop
of a bitch.
Did not have very many of those old like anime tropes that like are easy to make fun of.
Oh, yeah. That pop is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Vicious used the sword. Spike used the pistol. That was their thing. That's what got me obsessed with swords, was Vicious. Ooh. And the live action series starts this Friday. Oh, Vicious is
so
in
excited.
It. He looks
it
pretty
looks
cool.
It looks like it's going to be so good.
Well, Hunter, we already know you like Ayn.
He's a dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he hops. He's a little corgi. He moves on all four legs at the same time. That's all I needed.
No, that's because he ate a mushroom.
Yes.
Yeah, wasn't
I know.
Good.
I know. That's the only thing I've seen. That's it. I went in intentionally just for him to do that.
You will also like Cowboy Andy.
I love Cowboy Andy.
Cowboy Andy.
I'm Howdy, sorry. Partner. If I get my Teddy Bear Bomber episode and I don't have Cowboy Andy, I'm going to be very sad.
How you going to do it? Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to say something else. All right, Shelby, back to you.
All right. My second two favorite episode is called The Shell. Basically, Gumball's girlfriend? I guess they could be boyfriend and girlfriend at this point. I don't know. She's like this weird character that looks like she's kind of like Mr. Peanut. Like, she has the peanut shell, but she has these horns coming out. And, like, she has these little cutouts for her mouth and eyes. Gumball ends up cracking her shell. And so at one point, she just comes out of her shell. So it's essentially like she's just accepting of who she is on the inside, and she's going to let people
see. It's a metaphor.
Yeah, and it's a good one, Shannon.
I didn't say a thing. Just because I haven't got to that point where I can accept me doesn't mean they can't.
Local anti-metaphorist Shannon Young. Seen harassing the youngest cast member.
The barely legal Shelby.
Barely legal. And another thing.
But yeah, and the cool thing about Penny is, like, she is this crazy multicolored being. I don't even know how to describe her. She's like this weird jelly angel. It's weird. I don't know. But basically, whatever she perceives herself to be, like, if she thinks she's a monster, she turns into a monster. If she thinks she's hideous, she becomes hideous. Things like that. So she has to see herself in a good light for her to take that form of who she really is.
Okay, so I could spin this into a negative. Hold on. No, you know what? No, I'm gonna let it go. I'm gonna let it go.
I feel like I'd be watching this.
Kind of a really cool character idea.
Yeah,
I feel like I'd be watching this like the Dean from Community. This better not awaken anything in me.
It sounds like a very woke show, and I don't like it.
woke,
Jesse, please.
Are we all just a bunch of sheeple up in here?
Save me,
people.
Levi woke.
This Shannon will not save you. Actually, I think that assuming he heeded our warning, Asa and I warned Shannon not to watch this episode. I don't know if he ever did. The Game of Tones.
I think I finally did because it was very heartbreaking, but I can't remember the exacts of it. What was it?
Oh, it's real bad. So, I mean, it's a phenomenal episode. It's truly spectacular. So the episode starts with this tone that's just like it's causing a little bit of an earthquake. And Fry's like, I recognize it. I don't know where from, but I recognize that sound. I know I've heard it before. And as the episode progresses, the noise is getting louder and louder. And it turns out that it's loud enough and strong enough of vibration that it's actually about to destroy the planet. Like, Earth is about to get blown up by this tone.
Oh.
And Fry is desperately trying to remember where he's heard it from because he knows he has. So they decide to go through his memories. So you have a whole episode of Fry going back to the day he was frozen, because that's where he's confident he heard this. Goes back to the day he was frozen and is walking through his memory and desperately wanting to spend more time with his family that he's now realizing how much he misses, particularly his mom. Because, you know, it goes through kind of like what he did through that whole, like, last day. And, you know, he's desperately trying to just spend more time with his mom. But he can't because he doesn't have the memory of doing so. It's going through his memory. So he's having to leave, and they're trying to figure out what the sound is. And then it turns out it was one of the Niblonians, but they set him up with the way the episode ends is the real, like, just heartstring tugger. They give Fry a chance to go to his mother's dream so that he could say goodbye to her. And yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I didn't watch that episode.
it's such
really sad.
A phenomenal, like, everything about this episode is so good. But the first time I watched it, I'm starting to tear up a little bit now. Like, it's just so good. It's such a good episode.
Yeah, I don't do family very well. Or relationships or anything that's not violence and anger. At this point, I'm good with violence and anger, but all other things turned me into a whimpering chihuahua. I hope Parker didn't hear that.
He doesn't upstairs, whimper, okay. He just growls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he whimpers when he wants something.
He has to lure you
into a false sense of security, you see, right, and give you the idea that he's vulnerable, and then it's...
He's a monster. All right, well, let's just move right away from Jesse's pick and go to Hunter. Let's not talk about it anymore.
Pick from The Adventures of Pete and Pete is Season 2, Episode 3. This is The Call. Another, like they all are, totally ridiculous episode driven by a single premise. There is a phone booth in Wellsville, in the town where these folks live, that has been ringing off the hook for 27 years. No one can answer it because no one can get close enough to it without being driven completely insane. And so it's out in the middle of this parking lot and they just let it go. Well, as he is wont to do, little Pete decides one day, I'm just going to go do it. And so he has to go on this epic, you know, journey across town to get to it to try to answer it. And his way of trying to like help slash save him, Big Pete, is trying to figure out who the call is for, who needs to answer it so that it will stop. I'm going to give away a little bit, but not the whole thing, because I really do want people to go and watch this because it's actually really good. Mom doesn't get enough to do in the series in general, which kind of makes sense. I mean, it's a Nickelodeon show about, you know, the parents being the problem, but Dad gets highlighted a lot more than that just by nature of the time that it was produced. But this is one of those great episodes that gives Mom not just something to do, but really makes her a focal point.
Which she's a little odder of between the two parents. She's got a metal plate in her head.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, Dad just likes to grill, and he's the king of the road or king of fraud, depending on how you read his license plate. but Mom's got a metal plate in her head. She can do some things with that, which is kind of wacky. The call is one of my favorite ones because it's one of the few mystery driven like episodes of the show, and it's a pretty satisfying ending to it with yet another kind of weird lesson, especially not one that you would expect to teach to kids. I don't want to put it out there because I really want you to go see it for yourself, but it's a good one, and it's one of those that this feels like when I talked about some of the others are like quintessential episodes of the show or iconic ones. This was the one that it felt like when this series started in syndication, when you turned on Nickelodeon and it was on in syndication, you had like a 1 in 3 chance of it being The Call. They showed this episode all the time.
It was the bicycling to gain more time and the marshmallow on the nose.
Time travel and then the marshmallow on the nose. Yep. Those three were pretty much the go-to. And this, to me, was the best one of all. The time travel one's a good one, but it's not my top one.
Yeah.
I won't spoil it.
That's the first one that always comes to my mind, just because the logic makes no sense as an adult when you start thinking about it.
To clarify what Lindsay's getting at, Big Pete and Ellen finally get together, and because it's been, you know, they're a male and female friend pairing. Well, of course, eventually they are kind of treated as, well, we got to get together and they got to try it, and things go really poorly because of course they do. Little Pete is obsessed with the fact that because it's daylight saving time and it's falling back, because this is a very like autumnal show, almost everything feels like it happens in autumn because it takes place it was filmed in Canada. He's obsessed with the idea that if time shifts back and he's traveling fast enough when it happens that he can literally travel back in time. And because it's the show, naturally it works.
And because he can just keep hitting the next time zone and pick up more, even though you would never be able to bicycle in
on
that amount of time.
Yeah, of course. So that's another, I snuck another one in there. That's an honorable mention just because Lindsay mentioned it. But yeah, that's not my top one. But that's The Call is a critical one.
That's a good one.
Top one is coming up. We got one more round. Kids, stay tuned.
I'm last. Never mind. Yes, one more after this.
All right. Well, my next pick is the strangest episode of Tales from the Crypt. If you watched it, you wouldn't even know it was Tales from the Crypt. It's called Yellow. This is the weird one because there is absolutely zero horror to it. There are no monsters. There are no ghosts. There is nothing supernatural about it. It's about a soldier who is a coward. And he abandons his regiment or whatever, and his dad is his commanding officer. His dad is incredible. And by the way, this is what's the hell? Help me out here. You're gonna have to help me out here. Michael Douglas's dad, Kirk. Yeah. It was directed by Robert Zemeckis. It's a 2-hour episode. It's a movie, and it's Kirk Douglas is the commanding officer, and his real life son, not Michael, but his brother, plays his son in the show, and they basically put the son on trial, And the father is incredibly disappointed in him. Dan Aykroyd's in it. It's this long military drama. And the ending is particularly twisty and good. So Kirk Douglas convinces... I almost don't want to spoil it because I think it's that good of an episode. But I do... But I want to because I don't expect anyone to go watch it. So Kirk Douglas convinces his son that, you know, the only way I can get you out of this is if we pretend to execute you. So we're going to put you in front of the firing range and we're going to use blanks and you pretend to die. And then I'll send you home and we'll pretend none of this ever happened and we'll never speak of it again. And the son, seeing his way out of the military because he didn't want to be there in the first place, says, okay, let's do it. So they line him up in front of the firing squad and he convinces them, you know, just act brave, be brave for once in your life. So he gets in front of the firing squad and, you know, acts brave, chin up. He's decided to take his fate. And in those final moments, realizes that his dad set him up and the firing squad shoots him and kills him. And then everyone congratulates the general, the commanding officer for how brave his son was in his final moments. And that's the end of the episode. It was, it's real fucking good though. It's like I said, you wouldn't even know it was Tales from the Crypt if it wasn't Tales from the Crypt. It's just a really good war movie basically. And really
it
good.
It feels almost more like the Twilight Zone too. That feels like a much more Twilight Zone like.
Yeah.
Type of episode.
Well, if I remember correctly, this episode wasn't originally supposed to be Tales from the Crypt. It was something, there was another show that they had out in that time period. And I forget the name of it, but it was more of a fantastical non-horror anthology series. And it was going to be on that. But since Zemeckis was so closely tied to Tales from the Crypt, they decided to put it on there instead. And it was, I think it won awards. But it was just completely unlike any other Tales from the Crypt episode. And I think it's really what helped establish Tales from the Crypt as like a good like show that people need to pay attention to. So fantastic, fantastic episode. Very serious. Dan Aykroyd's in it. That's the goal. All right, Lindsay.
First to Ethan, Lupin the Third is actually a big influence on Bebop, which is why you probably suggested it. But Lupin is also very good.
Yeah.
Lupin the Third.
Yep. So we're going to backtrack just a little bit. Because my next episode is episode 22, Cowboy Funk, which has the Teddy Bear Bomber and Cowboy Andy. The main focus Howdy, partner. On it is the Teddy Bear Howdy, Bomber, partner. Who is setting up bombs with teddy bears all over the city. And fun fact, this episode originally did not air in its first run because it aired like a month after 9/11 happened, mm-hmm. and the imagery of two towers being blown up was seen as in poor taste and not appropriate at the time. But the whole episode is the Teddy Bear Bomber trying to get attention to get his message out, and he just can't. No one will listen to his message whatsoever.
What and was his Andy, message? I forget.
You never get to find out because he keeps getting interrupted the entire episode.
Oh, no. That'd drive me crazy.
Yep. But Cowboy Andy is a little rich boy who wants to be bounty hunter, cowboy in the literal sense. He's got the horse, the works. And the inner humor is he's basically a blonde, dumber version of Spike. And they end up having a little like rivalry partway through the episode. And then at the end, he admits that Spike is the better cowboy and tips his hat and goes off. And when we next see him, he is a samurai.
He comes back. Yeah. A samurai Andy.
And his reemergence is once again him interrupting the Teddy Bear Bomber, trying to explain what his mission statement is.
I feel like that's a shot at you cosplayers. You white,
that's fine.
You white folk dressing up as these, yeah.
You mean Inuyasha? Is it just another Inuyasha?
I knew it. You're a fucking Inuyasha. Eris could never love a half demon. all right. Actually, it's just regular Ash Ketchum.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm so sorry. What was your question?
Never.
It was about food, so I don't want to ask it.
I don't want to, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I looked at a curiosity, by the way. That episode, Yellow, was supposed to be part of a, and I think this is just funny, supposed to be part of a pilot for an anthology series called Two-Fisted Tales.
What?
Yep.
I think, actually, I think Two-Fisted Tales was another EC comic. Now that you say that, I got
to
look that
up. Well, it ended up airing as, it was going to be its own series as a spinoff from Tales from the Crypt.
Yep.
It ended up, they aired the pilot as a TV movie, according to the, this is all from the Tales from the Crypt wiki. But yeah, it didn't get picked up. And so they aired the pilot as a movie and called it a day. But yeah, it was going to be part of that. It's basically like a suspense thriller thing as opposed to
horror.
Supernatural.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right here.
Pulp comics as a show, pretty much.
Two-Fisted Tales as an anthology war comic published by EC Comics in the early 50s. So the same people that made Tales from the Crypt. So yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I would have watched it. That sounds interesting. All right, Shelby, last round.
All right. My favorite episode from The Amazing World of Gumball is The Console. I highly recommend everybody watch this. It's amazing. Gumball and Darwin are given an off-brand, knockoff handheld device called a Game Child.
Made by Soulja Boy.
Best episode.
Game
Child!
Inside is a game called Inverted Paradox, The Enemy Within, which is, they make fun of as just being another generic JRPG, which... it's basically Final Fantasy. Gumball names his character My Butt, so every time he is referred to in the game, I have an ointment to help my butt. I have an item for my butt. Like, it's just, it's one of those, like, as a kid when you would do stuff.
Oh, yeah, I did
that.
Like, yeah.
We name your rival Asshat.
So. Yeah, when I was a kid.
It was an out for anybody. Like, you could have just taken that out. But it basically every character in the game, they all have some weird item or a special move, and at the end of the episode, like, everyone gets to use their crazy boss killer KO move in a final just like boss fight in the end, and it's amazing, and they finally get out of the game because of that. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe Gumball picks up the game and is like, oh, only 99% complete. Well, gotta go again.
Oh, he's gotta get that full platinum.
He's a completionist.
Yeah.
Yep. Shannon, this is the one episode of this show that I have seen, and I do think you would greatly enjoy it.
It's amazing.
I mean, I like everything I've heard about Gumball so far. Incest, murder, suicide, I'm down. I'm into
it. It's not incest, it's stepfamily.
That's even better. I could watch that without having to go to church.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this on?
We hear.
All right.
Can you guys hear Tanner?
Yeah. I think he's going. I think he's going chicka chicka yank yank or something right now.
Yank yank.
Right. Jesse, last pick.
All right. Also, I meant to mention this earlier. Similar to 100, these are not in any particular order. Just kind of throwing them out there.
Yeah.
But two that didn't make it on the list that I'm going to mention because I want to. The first one, this again is not on my top five. War is the H word.
Yes, war were declared.
It's the whole, like, it's the MASH episode. I'm sure Lindsay's like real big fan of this one.
And Starship Troopers.
Yeah, a little bit of that too.
Yeah,
okay. I enjoy the Alan Alda robots.
it's a good episode. It's Fry and Bender sign up for the military so they could get a military discount on a pack of ham flavored gum.
Gum.
Unless war would declare.
Like Sergeant Lemons or Private Lemons or something like that.
Yeah, that was Lee Lemon. That was
Lee Lemon.
Lee had to join because they wouldn't let women join because there was an issue with the uniform and Zap Brannigan. But, they just kind of start out as, like, Bender actually says, like, so we could sign up, use the military discount, and then immediately resign, thus using you all for chumps? That's correct. Unless war were declared.
And then you hear
What's
a noise.
That noise?
Yeah.
War were declared.
It's a great
Stop
episode.
Stop exploding, you cowards. No, that's not the same episode.
No, it is not. No. But the Devil's Hands or Idle Playthings is the other
really
honorable
like
mention.
That
That's just a great episode. Fry swaps his hands with the robot devil.
You play bad and you should feel bad.
The hands, they keep touching me in places.
Yeah, they do that.
they get around. What did you do to my fingernails? I cleaned them. But yeah, he writes this whole like play for Leela with the holophoner. It's just a really sweet episode. They thought it was going to be the series finale. And it was just supposed, it was basically kind of like hinting like, yeah, no, they're going to be a thing. Don't worry, guys. But my actual favorite, like my actual fifth pick is going to be Meanwhile. It's the series finale. This is the episode where Fry actually proposes to Leela. They find the professor creates a device that will take you back in time 20 seconds.
Nope, 5.
Was it only 5 seconds?
No, it's 10 seconds.
Okay. Takes you back in time 10 seconds. Fry uses it all day long to, you know, like do various things. And then his plan is he's going to use it over and over again while he and Leela are on top of the tower for the date when she agrees to marry him. What he doesn't realize is that, like, doing so has messed with his watch. He's now 30 minutes ahead of what actual time is, and he thinks that Leela doesn't want to marry him because she didn't show up. So he throws himself off the top of this massive building and sees Leela coming as he's falling, and starts hitting the button, but he's been falling longer than the timer. Falls in an infinite loop. They figure out how to save him. They break the clock. And Leela and Fry are stuck in a frozen world where they just live out their life. Eventually, Farnsworth comes back, saves them both. They go back to their time. They ask if he wants to, if they want to start over again. They go for it. And then the very next episode that airs when the episode first aired was episode 1. It was infinite
loop.
Fun.
It was a nice little loop for rewatch.
Just like real life.
It's a really, really good episode. I like it a lot.
I've never watched the series finale. I don't think I'll watch the last season. I need to.
That's the season with Game of Tones and Meanwhile.
It's probably why I didn't watch that season, because you told me about that episode and I went, I'm good. All right.
Yeah, Game of Tones. Yeah.
No. Double H, last one. Then we got to race or shoot or do something.
Whatever comes up. The final episode I'm going to mention for The Adventures of Pete and Pete, because I told you it would come back, is Das Bus. So, you know that thing in the 90s where every show and every kid also thought this would happen to them because it happened on every show? The kids would take the career aptitude test. Oh, you take a test and this is what you should go do for the rest of your life. It was a very common trope. Big Pete finds out that he should be a bus driver, which was basically just their way of bringing Stu Benedict back. Stu Benedict is the bus driver, Shannon, that you've been compared to, probably because the most famous thing he says in the show at one point in time over his little thing to the kids is, passengers will refrain from killing my soul, at one point. But yeah, so Big Pete becomes a bus driver and is, like, trying it out. Meanwhile, Ellen creates a whole new set of vending machines. Like, she's gonna be the best vending machine purveyor ever seen, to the point that eventually she starts selling things like plane tickets and meat in them.
She's Japan.
It's just total insanity. The whole episode is just total insanity. But it also comes with one of the best lines, because of course at one point in time, first of all, Selma Blair is in the episode. Big Pete is trying to impress her. And at one point in time, he goes against Stu's orders, and Stu responds, "Carrot Top Judas, thou hast forsaken me." And it's just the guy who plays him, the delivery is so good. Of all the side characters, because I don't consider Artie a side character. He's basically in the main cast until he leaves. Of all the other side characters, Stu Benedict is the best thing to come out of that. Because as a kid, you look at your bus driver, and they're like kind of cool, but they're also very clearly insane and could kill you at any moment. And that's true of all of them, Jesse's dad. So
ours wouldn't kill us, but she would reprimand you worse than your mother. So
that's the same thing.
I don't think anyone ever thought my dad was cool, though.
I thought your dad was funny before I was funny. So, I mean, there's that. You know, he's got that going for him.
Fair enough.
but yeah, it's overall one of those episodes that it's not a great introduction to the series. Like, you're going to be very confused about what's going on if you watch it first, but it is another good summation of this is the core of this whole show. This is exactly what the whole thing is about. So yeah, Das Bus.
And that's me.
Yep.
Okay. I'm Stu Benedict. Bennett. What was it?
Passengers will Benedict. Stu Bennett is Wade Barrett.
Wade Barrett,
is
yeah.
Also, Cotton Mather was one of the guys from the Salem Witch Trials. I had to look that up, too. I don't know where I was getting that.
And Toby Huss played
Halloween
him?
Halloween trivia.
Yes, awesome. Yeah.
All right.
I mean, probably.
My last pick is first season. It's, I think a lot of people would say this is probably the best episode of Tales from the Crypt. It's certainly the most fun. It's called Cutting Cards. And it's about two gamblers, one played by Lance Henriksen, who's one of my favorite actors of all time. Hunter, you may remember him from Millennium.
Dude.
And the other guy, who I don't remember, but I also really love, where they are two gamblers who hate each other so much that they get engage in a increasingly insane game against each other. So they start playing cards. Then they play cards, but they then they play like Russian roulette. And the gun fails to go off. They're so eager for one of the other to die that they're playing Russian roulette. But then the gun doesn't go off. So then they start playing cards where they start chopping fingers off. And it goes on and on and on until at the very end you see them in a retirement home with no arms or legs, still playing cards against each other because they've mutilated themselves to the point that they can no longer exist like without help. And they're still bickering and still playing cards and cussing at each other. It's hilarious. And Lance Henriksen in this episode particularly is so over the top insane. Like, he is amazing. Again, there's nothing supernatural about it. There's no real horror. It's just two absolutely batshit crazy people who hate each other so much that they will go to increasingly insane lengths to kill the other person. And it is so good. And you should go watch it. I do have a couple honorable mentions. Every episode except the last season. So, because the last season they completely changed. They went to England and filmed everything there because it was cheaper. The puppet somehow looked worse, even though it was the same puppet. They made modifications. All the actors. Yeah.
It did not travel well.
He couldn't travel. Yeah. They had all British actors.
It's funny because there's a Muppet creature shop in London.
Creeper shop. Yes.
All right. Well, now I got to go to the group chat and change Shannon's name to Muppet Creeper.
I appreciate that. Daniel Craig is in that season, though. So I guess it can't be all bad. Like a very, very, very young Daniel Craig is in that season. There's only one good episode of the last season, and it's the animated one of the Three Little Pigs, which was also batshit insane and gory and just like disgusting. It's like Ren and Stimpy on acid. It is the only good episode of the last season that it killed the entire franchise. But everything up to that last season is gold. There's hardly a bad episode of Tales from the Crypt. Even the bad ones are funny. So John Lovitz is in one of them.
The one you described as your number one, to me, all I can hear is it's the exact opposite of that Mr. Show sketch where the two thugs end up marrying each other because they're waiting for the other one to flinch.
Oh, yeah.
I'll
marry your stupid ass. Till death do we part, motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's also a fantastic skit, Jesse, because what happens is these two guys are at a bar. They bump into each other and then they threaten to fight and neither of them will back down. So their girlfriends are like, come on, let's go. And they're like, no, I'm riding this guy all fucking night. So they end up dating and then getting married. And they go through their entire life together. And at the very end, David Cross is on his deathbed. They're old men. Bob Odenkirk's in his face. And he's like, you're a pussy. And he's yelling at him. And then David Cross just dies. And Bob Odenkirk goes, well, I guess he wasn't a chicken shit after all. And then he turns around and goes, waitress. And he looks at himself and goes, oh, my life. And the episode ends.
Right. A lot like, did you guys ever see the Key and Peele sketch like that, where they're Crips and Bloods?
No, I don't think I've seen that one.
I don't think so.
I'll send that to you guys after the show. We don't have to talk about it right now.
Yeah, because we're at 1:28 right now. Lindsay, please wrap this up.
Okay. Well, I also wrap have a couple up. Honorable mentions just because of my last watch through. Every time I go through it, a couple episodes seem to jump out at me more than they did in the past. Heavy Metal Queen this time. I don't know. I liked that episode a lot better this time through. It's basically a space trucker. She's a woman named VT and she has a game out that you give her $1 to take a guess at what her name is. And if you guess what it is, you get her stack of money. And she's very anti-bounty hunter. And it's just kind of an episode of her adventures with Spike for one get-go. And he ends up figuring out who she is. But because of who she is, he just takes his dollar back and leaves her her money. And moseys on his way. And then the other one, Brain Scratch, really jumped at me this time with our current climate. A certain speech of one of the characters in that specific episode hit a little close to where we're actually sitting right now. So yeah, that episode I've been thinking about for the last couple of days. But my absolute favorite episode is episode 18, Speak Like a Child, also known as the Beta Tape episode, where Faye receives a COD package that Jet has to pay for and gets all pissy about it. And when she comes back from losing all of her money gambling again, he demands the money. And she won't give it to him, so she goes off again. And he's like, I'm just going to return the thing. But Spike opens it, so they can't return it. So the entire episode is them trying to find a beta player to watch this tape on. And all of the madness they go through to the point of running into some, like, crazy guy that's obsessed with technology from when we were children. And going to an ancient museum and then bringing back a VHS player rather than a beta player. And just hijinks ensue because they don't know old technology. But at the very end of it, they do get to watch the tape. And it is a videotape that Faye recorded as a kid. And this kind of leads into the Hard Luck Woman episode, where it's her trying to find out who she is more with these clues.
Didn't that kind of start leading into the end of the series? Like, that's where everyone started leaving?
Yeah, it started wrapping up the different characters. But yeah, I still, if I have to pick one episode, if I'm just going to, like, grab a random episode to watch, it is usually Speak Like a Child.
It's a good series. And I can't wait to watch the new Cowboy Bebop this Friday. On Netflix, starring John Cho, who Lindsay did not realize was in it and did not realize it was from Harold and Kumar.
I realized he was in it. I didn't realize he was in those films because I never watched those films.
really quick.
But I've been getting really good reviews of it thus far, and I'm excited.
IGN gave it a 7 out of 10, which from IGN means it was probably like a 9 out of 10 because they're terrible
reviewers. I was
going to
say, the IGN one I watched said 9.
Then you are wrong.
Okay, well,
are you sure? Are you sure it wasn't NGI that you saw?
It was a guy, and it was at a 9, and I could have swore it said IGN, but you know what? This was a couple days ago.
Really quick, I do have Tanner's picks. He couldn't be here with us, but he did want to say his. His show was Hee Haw, and his 5 favorite episodes are the ones where they pick and grin. So.
I believe he specifically noted that his top episode is the one where he goes, and now here's Roy.
That's a good one. That's a good episode. All right. That's going to wrap it up for us tonight. Shelby has no idea what Hee Haw is. God bless her. Because don't look it up. Anyway.
Bless you, child.
It's like BET for hayseeds. So, all right. That's
whenever people are like, why isn't there a white entertainment television? There was. It got canceled years ago. It was called Hee Haw. That's it.
That's going to do it for us tonight. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll be back next week with some all new episodes. Whatever we do, we'll do it.
Wait a minute. We'll be back Sunday.
We'll be back Sunday.
Remember?
With our review for Ghostbusters Afterlife, a special episode on Sunday, with possibly a special guest from the film. That's not true, but they're also going to go watch it.
I mean, it is possible.
It's possible.
It's not going to happen, but it is possible.
This particular guest literally reached out to me today and said, if you do a Ghostbusters episode and you don't let me be a part of it, we will not be friends anymore.
I think I know who it is.
Well, let's just say that his review might be the best of the best. So,
has he watched the... Oh, okay, never mind. I don't know who it is.
You thought it was Cody, wasn't you? Didn't you? We were going to make the Cody joke. All right, that's next week on Sunday.
All I know is I've been told to take tissues.
I guess that we're not doing an episode next Thursday.
Why?
Thanksgiving.
I was about to say, next Thursday is Thanksgiving.
I mean, we could always do it early, like we did today. I mean, like...
Or late, whichever.
Whatever. We'll figure it out. Next week, we're going to play some video games and eat dinner. You guys take it easy, Krusty. Yeah. We'll see you on Sunday. Shelby, take us out.